Welcome into Locked On Knicks. It is Locked On NBA mock draft time. If you have not already, we did a whole Locked On NBA mock draft where we mocked out all 30 picks of the first round. Every Locked On NBA host represented their own team. And so, of course, as the Knicks, we represented the Knicks and took hold of the 8th, 27th, and 38th picks, which we wouldn't get to make the 38th pick in this had we held on to it. But Gavin, we made some trades. And in today's first episode, we have Prez from the Strickland. He's at underscore Presidente on Twitter. You can find his work at thestrick.land. And Gavin, in this first episode, we got into the lottery and our big moves that we made.
Yeah, we dealt with actually, Alex, this, it just clicked for me. Both of our trades in this draft were with heated rivals of our New York Knicks, but we made a deal with the enemy, moved back, and got a point guard of great intrigue for Knicks fans. That's all I'll say. I'll leave it slightly vague, so you have to listen to at least the first 10 minutes or follow us on Twitter to find out who we picked. But Prez breaks down our pick. What it would have looked like if we hadn't made the trade, and the best and worst picks of the lottery out of all the Locked On hosts right now on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now. Up left, now fires a three,
and he's good, and he's fouled, and he
Anthony for three, bang, that one goes down,
this is all about, back up off the glass, it's good, RJ Barrett,
becomes infectious.
All right, welcome into the Locked On Knicks, Alex Wolf, Gavin Shaw, and we have our special guest, Prez from the Strickland today, going to help us go over our mock draft that we did for the Locked On NBA mock. But first, Prez, how are you doing? How's everything holding up? How is your current home right now in D.C. after all the news this past weekend?
DC is about what you'd expect. There's a lot of people out in the streets, not me among them. I've missed out on most of the gatherings and protests and celebrations just because it's always a little bit of a risky proposition, so I'm just playing it safe during COVID. But we were driving through it, me and my wife actually, and like as the news was announced and there was horns and random yelling and just people yelling happily at each other. So it was a good time.
That's fun. Yeah. I was driving to Hoboken on Saturday to go meet up with a friend to see his new place. And then to just like go to an outdoor bar to chill for a little bit. And the news of course dropped while I was driving, and I get there and I had like a million texts. Supposedly there was some people out in the streets in Hoboken somewhere, partying it up. I did not run across those people, but people seemed to be in a pretty good mood. Gavin, what was before we get into everything, I mean, how was the city on Saturday?
Yeah, it was amazing. It really, and like, this is probably overstating it, but it really did feel like there was like a little bit of a weight that's been on it for 4+ years now. And it was kind of gone for at least for a day. Like you could tell, like everyone was really happy. And I think the reason it felt so unique was also obviously because of COVID. It's been like very, very down the last few months. And like, even when people are out, you could tell like they're a little bit reserved, a little bit cautious because of everything that happened here. And it felt like that like for a single day that like dissipated, and it was so cool. I was biking to meet up with some friends in Central Park, and like every single stop, like every car was honking, like kids were sticking their heads out the window and cheering. I ran into a nice couple, both wearing fuck Trump shirts. So it was great. And then in the park itself, in the meadow, like every like 8 minutes, someone would randomly start cheering, and like the entire like Chiefs meadow, which maybe had like 1,000 people on it, would just stand up and start flipping out. It was a lot of fun. It was like a citywide party. I know I had some friends in like Washington Square Park, where it was probably To your point, Prez, like a little like too much, like a lot of like NYU kids, like in giant groups, not all wearing masks, probably a little iffy, but all in all, it was a great, great day to be in New York.
And today, at least according to you and I, today is a great, great day to be in New York based off our mock draft. So we'll get into the mock draft. Yeah, I'm just going to kind of run down how things went. So we had free reign to make trades with the Locked On mock draft. Gavin and I we explored some avenues. We wound up being the most active trading team with two trades, and there was only one other trade made, period. So we doubled up the next best person.
Question real quick. With the Locked On Network, was there somebody for every team, or did some people have multiple teams?
Yeah, no, every team was an individual different person. Yep.
Pretty cool.
So, yeah, or two people. You know, in our case, like, some of them are split between two. But, you know, say it would just be you would message both of them and then, you know, they would confer or whatever and then get back to you, or, you know, whatever shit. So, yeah, it was pretty dope. It was pretty similar to how, you know, a real draft might go. And so I worked those email threads eventually. But we'll go through and we'll get to the point of the initial what would have been the Knicks pick to sort of set the stage here. So Minnesota didn't seem to really take that many offers for the number one pick and went with LaMelo Ball pretty much right away. Golden State, similarly, seemed to select pretty quickly, picked Anthony Edwards and didn't seem too interested in dealing. Although I didn't message them, but I didn't really care to because I didn't feel like trading up. Charlotte took Onyeka Okongwu, which is a little bit of a shocker. I mean, clearly not drafting as Michael Jordan would, because I feel like Jordan would have taken Wiseman. So they took Okongwu. Then Chicago took Killian Hayes, which was sort of a blow to us. So this is where we started feeling like, oh crap, well, there goes one guy that we were hoping would make it to number 8. Clearly, though, you know, that there was no mandate to draft how you think things are going to go in real life or anything, or based off what the consensuses are saying, which, you know, it seems like a lot of the mock drafts now do not have Killian going super high. But amongst, you know, the people that cover these teams and the people that cover the draft, he's pretty high. So he went about where I would expect, you know, as a Killian Hayes person, but not necessarily where you might think based off some of the mocks. Then Isaac Okoro goes number 5, another pick that sort of punched us in the gut, because that was another guy we were kind of hoping would make it to number 8. And then once again, I mean, his stock again among online people has gone down a little bit. We talked to Jonathan Wasserman. Hasn't heard him in NBA circles, but the infamous workout video of Devin Vassell did not deter Atlanta from taking him at number 6. So to this point, we had Ball, Edwards, Okongwu, Hayes, Okoro, and Vassell all off the board. This is where I started working. Well, where we both started working the email lines. Gavin, do you want to real quick go down the trade that you tried to work out with Sacramento, and then I'll talk about the one that we ultimately went with the Celtics?
Yeah, sure. First, I want to quickly remark that I thought it was kind of crazy that the Warriors took Anthony Edwards. Like, I'd be curious to talk to Locked On Warriors host Wes Goldberg about that, because the idea of him and Wiggins on the same team to me is just like maybe just getting the best asset. But I thought that was pretty interesting. Everything else in the first like few picks made a ton of sense to me. I think Charlotte would be really, really smart to snag Okongwu. But anyways, yeah, from a Knicks perspective, the trade that I wanted to do to deal with the Sacramento Kings and go get Buddy Hield and the 12th pick for the 8th pick, the 38th pick, and Julius Randle. And maybe if we had offered 27 instead of 38, that would have gotten it done. To me, that made a whole lot of sense, because as you guys are about to find out, we still kind of got our guy at 14. And I personally think Buddy Hield would be really, really good for the Knicks. And it would also open up like a lot more options in terms of what they can do in free agency and in the draft, already having their designated shooter. But Alex, that ultimately wasn't the trade we ended up going with, because the Kings did not want to do it. And you got a pretty good offer from the Celtics.
Yeah. Well, so then James Wiseman goes number 7, which I was talking to John Corrales, who hosts Locked On Celtics. And we were going back and forth a little bit. And I was like, hey, you know, he was one of the first guys I thought of like, oh, I could see if he wants to make a deal, because they have those 3 first round picks, picks 14, 26, and 30. And so I reached out to him. I was like, I was like, hey, would you be interested in dealing up to 8? And he's like, yes, if Haliburton makes it there. And I was like, okay. And at first I was like, I don't know if that's going to be a guarantee with Detroit there, because I feel like Detroit maybe would take him to field. And then at a certain point, right before Detroit actually made their pick, he messaged me back and said, no, I don't think that's going to be an issue, because Wiseman fell, they're going to take Wiseman. So Haliburton will be there if you want the deal. And he's like, I'll do it for all 3 picks. And I thought he might counter me with, like, I'll only give you 14 and 26 or something like that. But he was, like, all on board, like, I want Haliburton, I'll do it. So we traded that pick. Because I was like, I think that's a pretty good deal. Now, the NBA draft is days away, and the Locked On NBA Podcast Network is mock drafting every first round pick. Locked On Knicks was the most active trading team in the whole mock draft. So we were pretty excited with the outcome that we came out with, and we're excited for you guys to hear it as it comes up on the Locked On NBA draft shows. So listen to the Locked On NBA podcast every day leading up to the draft to hear projections of each pick and expert analysis from Chad Ford, The Athletic's John Hollinger, and Sports Illustrated's Jeremy Wu. Check the feed to catch up on past shows and make sure you don't miss a pick. Subscribe to Locked On NBA today, wherever you get podcasts. Just a reminder, today's episode is brought to you by Built Go. Built Go makes you the best you at whatever you do, and it helps you break through your wall. Whatever type of wall it is, it could be a mental wall, physical wall. You can break through it with Built Go every day. Built Go comes in easy-to-take 1.5-ounce packages. I would say that you could put it in your briefcase for the most focused presentation ever, but let's be real. You don't have a briefcase right now. You're sitting in your pajamas. You put on a nice shirt and go on Zoom, so you can keep it in your shirt pocket, you know, before you go on that Zoom call to give your presentation. Take your Built Go. Give the best presentation ever. You can put it in your golf bag, a nice, very COVID-safe activity during this re-outbreak of the fall. You could, you know, take a Built Go and power through the back nine, or you just put it in your pocket just to get through the day. You know, life's hard, but, you know, Built Go makes it easier. It is the best workout gel on the market. It's a lot like that 5-hour energy you hear so much about, but you don't get that same crash feeling, and it's made with all natural stuff, so it's better for your body. Built Go also comes in 3 delicious flavors. I can testify, I've had all 3. They were all fantastic. Peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. My personal favorite is the peanut butter honey, because the consistency of Built Go is somewhat like honey. It is a workout gel, it is called. And so having the peanut butter honey just tastes just right. How does it work so well, though, Built Go? Well, it combines energy gel with collagen protein. Collagen protein is fast absorbing, so it gets into your system fast, and it's easy on your stomach. It's also loaded with good stuff to ignite your work, like beta-alanine, B3, and honey, and a kick of caffeine to really, you know, kick you in the butt. And then it kicks in to really keep you going strong with vitamins B6 and B12, 10,000% of your daily dosage of vitamins B6 and B12. I could say I took Built Go before my workouts. You know, my gym was operating safely, and hopefully it will for a while longer. But, you know, as long as I'm able to keep going to the gym with COVID, Built Go has been helping me a lot with my workouts, getting my muscle back that I lost from my time away from the gym during the start of COVID. And honestly, I get way, way better results if I take a Built Go before I go to the gym than if I don't. Also, the collagen protein promotes joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health, so it literally makes you look better in addition to making you feel better. So if you're interested in getting some Built Go for yourself, visit BuiltGo.com and use promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Again, use promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. We had a bit of a strategy, which we'll get into in a moment here. But Prez, I don't want to just make this me and Gavin retelling the whole draft. So, like, just on the surface, before anything else happens, what are your thoughts of 8 for 14, 26, and 30?
Well, the first thing I'll say is it's interesting, and that he wanted Haliburton Everybody, when they talk about who the Celtics wants to trade up for, mentions Okongwu, but obviously in this mock, Okongwu was off the board very early. But the Celtics want to consolidate in real life. They don't have enough roster spots. And after Okongwu, Haliburton is probably the best fit, to be honest, especially if you think Tatum's going to continue developing his playmaking like that. They're one of the few teams where you could probably get away with a fake playmaker at the one like that. That's basically what they do with Marcus Smart. Similarly to Haliburton, he's a good pick and roll passer, but he's not really a collapse and kick kind of guy. And he's similar to Marcus Smart. He'll take a bunch of threes as long as they're catch and shoot. So, I never really thought about trying to trade up to get Haliburton, but that's really not a crazy idea. I know a lot of people on Twitter think I hate Haliburton, and it's really more that I just hate him for the Knicks. But for Boston, I think that would actually be a pretty strong pick. As for the Knicks, the way this draft broke, I think it's solid, but it's a little risky. And my theory for as somebody who's risk averse is, if you're going to trade down, you should be okay with whoever. Like, if you're going to trade down three spots, you better have three players you like. You can't be dependent on somebody picking like somebody else out of the blue, and then one of the three guys you like, or one of the two guys you like, dropping. That's leaving it to chance, which is probably a little too risky for the first very large investment of the Leon Rose era. So let's see. Boston's what, 14th? So, and the Knicks are 8. So you got to have, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. So you got to have pretty much five guys who you're comfortable picking, because if you have
six actually, if you count, not because Haliburton went already. So then we'll get into it in a sec, but there was, we were six picks later then at that point. So basically you have to be comfortable with losing five different guys and still coming up with whoever the sixth is.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know who y'all, if you guys were that serious about it and had six guys, like, who's the worst case scenario pick in here? Or if you were just like, fuck it, we'll do it live, right? We'll do it outside.
I was thinking about that a little bit in retrospect, and I think it's interesting because I would have argued for a guy we ended up getting. I think I would have made a case to take Desmond Bane there, which would be fascinating at 14. Like, I think IRL, like, there's very little chance he ends up going that high. I do think he is that kind of value, and he's a good enough player to justify it. But if you're the Knicks, and to your point, the first pick of the Leon Rose era, like, theoretically, the guy you get, you want to at least pick someone who has an argument that they could have star upside. And that's very obviously, that's a high likelihood going to be Desmond Bane's trajectory. So it would have put us in an interesting spot, Alex, because I don't think we really consider that scenario, because I know your rationale at the time was basically like, we wanted to end up with one of Patrick Williams or Kyra Lewis Jr. And if one of them had gone, you were going to find a way no matter what to trade up and get the other guy.
The other thing it's definitely possible. Like, I'm sure there are some teams that would prefer multiple picks later than one higher paid, very mediocre pick, given the weakness of draft earlier. So it's definitely possible, but I'm definitely too much of a coward to roll like that. So, hats off to you for being ballsy, and it seems to have worked, because I won't spoil it, but you guys got one of the guys you wanted, so.
Yeah, well, I may as well just dive right into it then, right? This is like prime example number one of Ricky O'Donnell said something like this recently on our show when he came on, where he was like, we're just talking about like the difference between like, you know, like draft Twitter. This is like something that's fascinates me and is going to continue to fascinate me for a while. Like draft Twitter player evaluation versus NBA scout player evaluation, and why there's often such a disconnect, you know, with certain guys of how all of draft Twitter, you know, you could even look at something so simple as like Luka Doncic, you know, that says Luka Doncic is going to be like LeBron James level good. And it's very obvious to anybody with eyeballs, you know, on Twitter, you know, and whatever that, and particularly scout types, you know, that he's going to be the shit. And, you know, then you get two NBA front offices that pass on him, a third one that trades out of the spot where they could have taken him and takes someone else two picks later with a nominal pay up. And now you have Doncic tearing it up. So I'm always intrigued by that. But anyway, not to go off course too much. To get back to like what Ricky said the other week, he was like, I think maybe some of that is that people on Twitter and people that write, you know, about the NBA and write about the NBA draft. He's like, if I put up a mock draft and I have certain things go certain ways and certain teams take certain players and then it doesn't work out that way, or even if it does work out that way and the team takes that player and the player doesn't work out, my job's not at risk. He's like, but if if someone in the NBA takes so-and-so at pick 8 and it doesn't work out, they might get fired over that. And that's a real possibility. Like, you know, there's a lot more at stake in the actual game here. So if I were actual Leon Rose, would I have played this draft exactly how I did? I probably wouldn't have played it quite as much like NBA 2K. But as it stood, I wanted to have some fun and I wanted to shake things up. So I went ahead and did it. And I had a strategy, which was sort of like what Gavin said there, where, you know, we tabbed Patrick Williams and Kyra Lewis as two guys that we wanted. And so, you know, Denny Avdija was still on the board. Obi Toppin was still on the board. They ended up being the next two picks, which was sort of predictable to me. I feel like those two just weren't going to make it out of the top 10 in this particular field, based off what I know about how some of the people had done in our previous mock drafts that we had done, you know, prior to this. We did like some that were lottery only, some that were delete 8 only, stuff like that. So I sort of had an idea of how some people were thinking. So those two picks get made. And my strategy then was the second that one of the two got picked, I would try to trade for the very next pick and use some of that ammunition that I just got from Boston to do it, but hopefully end up with an extra pick, you know, in the end. So my thought was, okay, you know, Patrick goes at 11. So then we had Sacramento and New Orleans ahead of us. I was fairly certain that New Orleans was going to take Kyra Lewis, because I just thought it would be a really good fit. I pretty safely ruled out Sacramento because they obviously have De'Aaron Fox. Do you really need a De'Aaron Fox clone to back him up? You know, I just couldn't see it with other, you know, with wing talent available on the board, stuff like that. I just couldn't really see it. And they're trying to, you know, hopefully add some pieces to maybe beef up and maybe, you know, contend for a playoff spot, which they didn't really end up doing in the bubble. So, you know, I tried to trade with Sacramento first, and my idea was 14 and 26 to get me back up to 12, which I thought maybe would work. Because, again, Sacramento trying to contend for the playoffs, but they have enough flexibility around the margins of their roster that they could carry two rookies in this year out of the first round, and I think they could safely do that. So I gave them that offer, and they were apparently very convinced that I was going to take their guy, which ended up being Aaron Nesmith. I had no interest in Aaron Nesmith. So then it gets to New Orleans, and I'm like, well, crap, I think New Orleans is going to take my guy, and that's going to be annoying. And that's where this risk plays in, Prez, where you said, you know, I probably should have had a slightly better plan. Now, we did have a backup plan, which was, we're like, we really want Kyra, but if he goes to New Orleans, then we would have put ourselves in a situation where, like Gavin said, maybe you look at Desmond Bane. We were willing to think about Tyrese Maxey there. Also, Pokuševski, if we wanted to really shoot for the moon.
Break glass in case of emergency and draft.
Yes. Yeah, Poku was our very thin fire extinguisher to try to salvage the star potential of this draft. So then I'm waiting and waiting on New Orleans. I try to make them an offer. I made them the same offer. I said, look, to move up one pick, I'll give you pick 26. They're like, no. I'm like, are you sick? I'm like, what? Whatever. And I was just like, fine, just take whoever you're going to take them. And I like steeled myself up. And then they take Sadiq Bey. And I was like, there's no way that the basketball gods, even these fictional basketball gods, like the Knicks this much. So Then we wound up taking Kyra Lewis at pick 14, and everything worked out pretty good. We took a guy that honestly was one of two that we would have considered taking at eight. I think ultimately, I think I could speak for you, Gavin, in saying that we would have wound up taking Patrick Williams probably at eight if we had helped.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a guy that we're almost as happy with ultimately getting, and we netted extra assets, which, you know, I won't spoil it, but as we'll see in a minute, we did manage to do a little consolidation. But I guess before we move forward, onward and upward, like, Prez, do you have any, I think we've already heard your thoughts on Kyra and stuff, but if this would happen, let's just like assume this happens in real life for the Knicks somehow, that they trade back and they luck into still getting Kyra Lewis, who they clearly are very interested in real life as well. What would your reaction be from, you know, an observer perspective as far as that's concerned?
Oh, I'd be super ecstatic. I mean, in real life, I don't think Kyra's dropping past Phoenix because they have a type, and he's need and type for them. But if, you know, Denny fell and he's just like too good of a talent to them, and they pick him and Kyra slid to 14 and we have that, that'd be awesome. One thing I'll say though, that I'm glad you mentioned is, like, teams, you shouldn't bet on it, but teams make ridiculous picks every year. It happens every year. Or questionable picks where you're just like, all right, I have no idea what they're doing, but one more good player falls even lower, right? Like, Brandon Clark fell to 22. 22?
The most egregiously horrible draft night slide of all time, according to me.
All right. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's not even always the, like, top, like, the Luka, like, obviously Luka's, like, in his own category. And the guy was the MVP of the league that Denny got a small amount of minutes in, and people consider Denny a ready-to-plug-in NBA player. So, like, it still boggles the mind that Luka was not the number one pick. But a more common scenario is, like, Brandon Clark, where someone who's pretty good, but maybe not a, you know, consensus top five pick, but should probably be a top 10 pick slide. So that's essentially, you know, that you don't bank on it, but that's definitely one of the factors if you're Rose or Alex Wolf in the war room, you know, see what happens. And like I said, as long as you have backup plans that you're comfortable with, I think it's completely fine. Like, Maxey is the perfect example. Like, if Kyra got picked instead of Bay, I forget who you said. You said Poku, Maxey, and Terry.
And Bain, actually. I mean, Bain was in consideration.
Bain, too. Right. It literally all depends on what the front office's big board is like. Like, for me personally, not that it matters, but, like, Maxey is right on the edge of I forget where I have him now. I move him around, like, every day. I think I have him at, like, 11. So if Maxey is guaranteed to be on the board and I can make this deal and I'm not, like, extremely preferable, if I don't really prefer Patrick Williams over him, then I'm doing that shit. If I really, really prefer Patrick Williams, then I'll keep it. But it would have to be a pretty significant margin. And I'm kind of the same mind y'all are. Like, these guys are all good. I'll be happy to get Pat or Kyra or Maxey or whichever one of them falls.
Yeah, so just to clarify, you would have taken Maxey if Kyra had gone one pick before?
Yeah, I think so. On my personal big board, I think I have Poku ahead of Maxey. They're in the same tier, though.
Mm.
So if I, like, sprinkle on a dash of real-life risk management, I'd probably take Kyra instead of Poku. But definitely both of those guys in the mix, along with Maxey. And then there's, like, a gap, and then you got, like, Bane and Terry and other folks.
I'm curious, out of those first 14 picks, what do you think was the best value, and what do you think was the worst value?
Yeah, because that's the lottery, actually, as it turns out. That's it. We picked it to end the lottery, so.
Well, I guess for the worst value, I'd probably say, it's got to be, if we're incorporating, like, who's on what team,
yeah,
I'd probably say Bay, like, just because his whole thing is he's a big wing who can shoot, and like, he's not clueless dribbling the ball, but like, you have two fours who you're going to pay a bazillion dollars, Ingram and Zion, so you really don't need another big wing, because you really should be giving 60 minutes a game to those guys. So I don't know what the hell. I know, like, what they going to do, run out Zion at the five? Like, low-key, that might be the answer now that I think about it. But, like, realistically, they probably are not going to do that.
Yeah, I was thinking, I was surprised that Sacramento took Nesmith or Naismith, just because I feel like they're already trying to get off field, and they have Bogdanovich seemingly they're going to give a big extension to. So it seems like they have perimeter shooting pretty locked up, and to get, like, a one-dimensional guy like that, I wasn't really sure. Outside of our Kyra Lewis pick, which I think was pretty darn good, did you have a favorite pick in there? I liked Chicago getting Killian Hayes. I think in real life I'd be impressed if Charlotte took Okongwu over Wiseman, but was there one that stood out to you, Prez, as being particularly good?
Yeah, I'd probably say for me it'd be a tie between Hayes and, ironically, Halliburton to Boston, just because they get more from him than most teams, so they get a unique value. Like, all the other teams there, like the Wizards or the Pistons, if they pick Halliburton, they don't get the same value that Boston gets. That's not how it works. But Boston gets the one guy outside of Okongwu who can really help them now, probably. And you know, I won't get into it, but, like, I've even found myself wondering about Okongwu, like, if I'm overrating his floor a little bit. So, like, the learning curve is pretty steep for, it's a good long-term pick, but, like, it's hard to ask, especially to ask a kid like Okongwu, who just came from Chino Hills to USC, and then is going to be going to the NBA, to just keep up with all the craziness of NBA offenses and decoy actions and this and that in the playoffs. But then again, like, he went from Chino Hills and then was the best defender on the best defense in the country. So he clearly picks up on things pretty fast. But anyway, yeah, I'd probably go with Boston's pick.
I would give a shout out to, I mean, we already said he was our other target, but I'll give a shout out to Jeff Garcia, Locked On Spurs. I think getting Patrick Williams at 11 based, again, this is all, you know, everything in here is happening with how we all, as the Locked On hosts, view things through our own lenses. But in real life, like, Patrick Williams is a guy that's now getting potentially even top five buzz, you know, if some team falls enough in love with him, but, you know, is getting love from Detroit, whatever. I think for San Antonio, he's kind of the perfect player. Like, he's going to be, I don't mean to draw such lofty comparisons, but, like, you could see a world where he could end up having a similar career trajectory to Kawhi Leonard, minus the sort of changing of the guard thing. You know, obviously I think they're headed towards a real, you know, proper rebuild for the first time now in a while. Which maybe they'll put that off one more year. I don't know. It sounds like DeRozan is kind of on his way out. And that would, you know, for whatever DeRozan's faults, he's kind of one of the reasons they were still clinging to hope of, you know, maybe one last playoff run these last couple years. But I think Williams is the perfect type of Popovich player that, and you know, he comes from a college system that I think, philosophically is kind of similar to how Pop runs his team, which is guys have roles, guys have, you know, things that they're supposed to be good at. And, you know, you have a role to play, you have things that you have to account for. If you don't do that, you're going to get benched. And if you do all the things that Pop asks you to do and do them well, you're going to find playing time. And, you know, you're going to have real chances to succeed, but also to kind of be eased along. Like, I think Pop is low-key one of the better coaches at easing players along and helping them find their potential in the league. I think we just sort of maybe underappreciated it for a long time because of just the fact that the Spurs were just so good with that, with their big three for so long, that so many guys kind of came and went from there that were eased along. And, you know, some of them were even older players when they got there, but some of them were rookies. You know, Kawhi was obviously the shining example of it, but they've had guys like, you know, Patty Mills that have, you know, come along like that, and Danny Green, and, you know, all these guys that they sort of just let slowly build up through their system and eventually become, you know, really functional NBA players. So I think that would probably be like a perfect landing spot for Patrick Williams. And I thought that was a really good pick and probably a really good value based off the ceiling that, that Williams has. But yeah, did you guys have anything else you wanted to add to the lotto discussion before we move to post lotto here for the back half of the draft?
I think we could probably keep it moving.
Okay, that's all for today's episode. As usual, you know, we went super long, but it is a fun episode. So we did not care at all about going extra long with Prez on this. So in the next episode, we will go through the thrilling conclusion of this 2020 mock NBA draft. Obviously, we ended the lottery with a bang, getting Kyra Lewis, who we weren't positive we were going to get. He manages to slip to us at 14. And I will tell you what, the good fortune did not end there, at least in our eyes. We got, in the end, a fantastic grade from Prez on our draft. We made one more trade. And I think we shook things up more than any other team in this Locked On NBA mock draft. So we will get into that next time on Locked On Knicks.